I'm Laura Vinroot-Poole. For over 20 years, I've owned Capital, an internationally recognized specialty store in Charlotte, North Carolina. On this podcast, we unlock the stories of people's lives through the stories of what they wore. These aren't conversations about fashion. These are conversations about people.
Everybody wants to know her name.
Mira Makati is known for her colorful designs with cartoon-like embroidery and positive affirmations. She's also the co-owner of the internationally renowned specialty store Plum in Beirut. What I found most inspiring about Mira is her ability to maintain such a bright inner world despite being raised in the midst of a civil war. She truly embodies every bit of her sunny collection, and I hope you'll enjoy our conversation. Is this the first time you've been in the South?
I mean, I've been just half a day to Raleigh on a college tour, but it was very different. It's the first time in Charlotte.
Yeah. And what did you came to dinner last night with us? What were your impressions?
I mean, I was like on a cloud, really, like texting pictures to my parents, to my husband, to the kids, saying it's just like heaven. And it's funny because it turned out that my brother used to come all the time to Charlotte.
Oh, really?
He was living in New Orleans. And he's like, yeah, I know, it's a very charming place and it's really nice.
And what were your thoughts about the way people dressed as compared to London? Or,
well, it's like everyone has his personality.
Yeah.
And everyone was like colorful or like dressed in a very personal way, versus I'm used to like seeing ladies dressed up always the same in London. It's like you feel it's 5-6 brands that everyone wears. And in New York it's the same, like you feel everyone is wearing black. Yeah. But like, I don't know, here you felt that each person had her own personality, and it's really like inspiring to see that.
Yeah, and everybody wears color. And
yeah, and I mean, everyone looked really good.
Thank you.
The hair is perfect. The colors is
they turned it out here.
Really, like it's impressive.
I think that women in the South are not afraid to be noticed.
Yeah.
And not afraid to be beautiful. And I think that that's oddly unusual. Now, you're from Beirut. You grew up in Beirut. And I would think women there are, they're some of the most beautiful women in the world. I mean, I would think they're okay with being beautiful there.
They are. I mean, it's like very, they live to be beautiful and take care of themselves.
Yes.
It's really nice. And they do like colors. I think it has to do with maybe the Mediterranean or like the sun or something.
Yeah.
But here, I must say, like, I felt people were daring. At all ages, it's not like people were one more conservative than the other. No, everyone was like, had her own personality in the way they would dress. Everyone looked great, really.
That's a great compliment. You were born in Beirut and left during the war.
So, yeah, I left. I was 6 years old.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And grew up in Paris. So yeah. I studied there, lived there most of my childhood, like from six to till I was like 23 years old.
Uh-huh. Your parents' house was there. So did you go back and visit?
Yeah, I always go back and visit. But like since then, they moved. When I'm there, I stay with my husband and the kids. My husband's there very often.
He's Lebanese also.
He's Lebanese as well. Yeah, so I grew up in Paris, met my husband in Italy. He was living in New York. I was living in Paris, so we were commuting all the time. Then ended up in London for a couple of years. Then went to Beirut for 5 years.
Ah. And what was that like going back?
It was not the easiest, to be honest. It's very small and everyone knows everyone.
Sure.
Which could be great, but which could be also like more limiting in terms of like...
I live in my hometown, so I understand.
You understand, yeah. So it was like... Plus, security-wise, it wasn't great.
Right.
I just missed like the culture, museums.
Yeah.
You can't like walk in the street with a pram, for instance, because no one stops at the red light. So it's quite particular.
Oh my God.
It's like you go out and you don't know if you're going to come back. So it's like very much of a survivor.
Do you remember the transition like when you were six when you left? And was it very different then than when you came back in your 20s?
I think when I was six, my whole life was the school and my friends. So you don't really look at anything
else. The traffic.
Yeah. You have no sense of danger or
but
anything.
The danger wasn't as prevalent then.
I mean, I just
I guess
remember,
it was because you left during the,
yeah,
the war.
Yeah, because the war, yeah. I just remember war and like hiding under underground. I mean, like weird souvenirs. So,
do you remember being afraid?
Yeah, I do. Like, it's very funny, but I'm scared of thunderstorms.
Yeah, yeah.
Fireworks, you know? It's like, it's things that like... but it's really funny because I feel it wasn't like the... It was a sad time maybe in my life, but I like... It's as if I block it and I never think of the sad days. I only think of like the great days, the great weather, the
amazing food, beautiful,
family. So it's like my brain kicks out everything that was negative.
Well, I can see that in your clothing.
It's true, yeah.
Your father was in politics. He was a politician.
My grandfather. And my father-in-law.
My father was a politician, and I have total post-traumatic stress disorder from politics in general.
I'm the same. I'm just like, I can't understand maybe the... For me, like we're here for a short period of time and we have to make the best out of it. Yeah. And I feel that in politics, sometimes you like fight over like things that are not important. At the same time, maybe some people like I know they feel they could make a difference.
Yeah.
So I really admire that. But I escape from all this world and prefer like the artistic and more dreamy side
and
of
you
the
live
world.
It, yeah. And tell me about your first fashion memory or your first indication of style, I guess.
So I was in Rome with my mom, like the women here, I guess. Like she,
very glamorous.
She's very glamorous. Yeah. Even today, like she dressing up is something very important in her everyday.
Is she Lebanese?
Yeah, she's Lebanese, but she's like, doesn't look like me. She's very, very blonde, huge big eyes, green. Like she could be French more than Lebanese.
Right. And she lives in Paris.
And she lives between Paris and Lebanon.
Okay.
So basically we were in Rome and I remember always going to this lady called Marta. It's very funny, but I still remember her name from ages ago. And Marta would give mom like a bag of knit sweaters in the middle of the piazza. And then we go back to the hotel and she'd be like picking which one she wants to pick. And I was very intrigued saying like, but who's this girl and why are those sweaters with you and what are you doing? Because she would ask me which one I like more or... And then she explained, she's like, you know, she's a fashion designer. She does those sweaters. And I was like, oh, that's what I want to be when I'm...
And how old do you think you were?
I was 6.
Oh, wow.
And it's funny because I neither wanted to be a singer, nor an actress, nor a teacher, nor anything that my friends would want to be. For me, that was it. Like at 6 years old, I even have a drawing of like a planet. Actually, it was during like bombings and things like that. I remember we were sitting in the hallway and I had like a secret little book and I had like a planet. And I'm like, when I'm old, I'll become a fashion designer.
That's incredible.
So it's really funny that like I still remember
it's amazing.
The way the book looked,
the
drawing.
Do you still have
it? No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't know if my mom kept
your mother,
it somewhere, but I haven't seen it in years. Oh. I was 16 years old. Did high school, so finished quite early. And my dad was like, you have to go to a business school or like do something more serious and then you do whatever you want. And for me, I'm like, no, I have not 1 minute to lose. I really have to go to a fashion school very, very soon. And it was like a whole drama at home because for him, like fashion wasn't something serious.
Yeah, of course.
But my mom backed me up a lot. And so I did end up like being... the youngest student at college.
And where did you
studying
go?
Fashion. So I was in Paris and I went to a school called ESMOD. While I was still at school, I would go to Parsons. We had like a Saturday classes. So I would go to Parsons classes on Saturdays and to school in the weekdays. So I was very determined.
Yeah. What were you designing then? Was it similar to what you do now?
Not really, to be honest with you. When I first started, it was more evening. And then it became very manly. So it was like always like men's suits, very inspired from men.
In the 90s it was?
In the 90s. And all of a sudden, it's just like everything changed. And I remember like the first collection that I designed for my own, it was... all around the games. So like I had a cardigan with like the Monopoly all around it. So that was like, I had just started and I just made like an agreement with a knitwear factory and they were super supportive because I didn't have to pay them for the samples. My first collection, even if it was 100 years ago,
yeah,
is very similar to what I do now.
Yeah.
It's like as if I found myself.
And then in between, it wasn't as much. You sort of veered to a different direction and then came back.
Yeah. I tried, like, for instance,
that's so funny.
The fashion school, my specialization was couture.
Yeah.
I didn't used to like to cut patterns on papers. I used to like to do everything on the mannequin.
Yeah.
So that's why I did like spécialisation couture. It was like, I hesitated between man and couture, which are like two different worlds.
But
I
they aren't in a way, you know, they're both very detailed, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I still see things like, for instance, many of the shapes are very androgynous, like the coats are very manly, as if you've like took them from your dad or your grandpa's closet.
Ideal for me.
Yeah.
Wow, we have a men's store and I think I'm their best client.
Oh, wow, really?
I just love, I don't know, there's something, they're so comfortable, but they're also, they're so relaxed.
And cool, I think, as well.
And so, they fit really well.
It's funny, but every time I'm like recruiting a designer and I go to like a headhunter, and when they ask me, what brands do you like? Mm-hmm. It's always like menswear.
Yeah.
And then one lady, I remember once saying, it's impossible to take a menswear designer and put him in a woman's world, because then you will struggle a lot with shapes. And I'm like, no, but that's exactly what
that's
I love.
That's exactly what you want, yeah. So, and that is how you dress.
Yeah, I mean, it's still, yeah. So I think, yeah, even if it wasn't as it is today, the fact of having like a menswear background. They even did like a internship at Chiruti, for instance.
Right.
So it's like very man world. And like at Dior. So two different worlds that have not that much to do one with the other. But then that's what I kept for my line. Like I would have attention to details. Even if it's the lining, it has to be pretty. Even if you don't see something, it has to still be nice. The inside should be as nice as the outside. So maybe that's like the couture specialization. Yeah. And the man for the shapes. But like, I think the playfulness came when I first started. So I did that Monopoly collection, sold it like at home to friends and friends of friends, and took the money that I made when I sold that collection to make another collection. So my dad was really impressed, because he was so stubborn in his way of like, no, you have to do a business school and all that. That
and
I
how
had
old
to
were
do
you,
everything.
Like 20?
I started school, I was 16. 19.
Oh, wow.
It was 3 years. So I was like, yeah.
After Monopoly, what did you do?
So after Monopoly, I did like two collections very similar to the Monopoly.
And also, where did you sell them? Did you just sell them to friends, you said? Or you
so
sold
the first
the
one, it was just like to friends.
Okay. And in Paris.
In Paris. And with the money that I made in that sale, which was like really good.
Yeah.
I was able to make a collection that wasn't only knitwear. So the knitwear stayed. So I would still work with that factory that supported me.
I was going to say, it would have been amazing if you had your mother's Roman knitwear designer.
Oh, yeah, my God. It's funny, but like I never saw her back, but I still see her best friend.
Right.
And I always tell her, please tell her that I owe her everything. She
and
doesn't know me. She's seen me when I was
and
six.
And then you became a designer
and
from
like,
it.
Yes, it's... sometimes like you feel the universe calls you for something.
Absolutely.
And you have to follow it, I think. So I was still in Paris, designed maybe a couple of collections that I remember selling to Net-a-Porter when they first started. Yeah. So it was like Nathalie Massenet in Paris in like a showroom, not even in like a trade show, in Trenoy.
Yeah, okay, like exactly,
And she came with like a white booklet, and I'm like, my sister was helping me, and she's much more like the business person, and I'm much more the dreamer. So she's like, can I take some of your things on consignment? Because I'm just starting something online, and there was nothing called online. So I was like, everything was really new. And she looked so, like, she was so pretty. The file, the presentation, everything was so gorgeous. And I fell in love with the name. I'm like, Net-a-Porter is like so amazing.
So smart.
So I was like, okay, I'll do everything on consignment. My sister was freaking out. She's like, where would we bring the money from? How can we produce something? What if it doesn't sell? I'm like, we'll always sell it to friends. We'll just manage. It's just amazing. So that was like maybe the second collection. And it's funny because until now, I would have thought that she would forget. And every time she sees me, she's like, I have to thank you. Because
you're the first, right?
It's like people like you that believed in the project.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I could have never made it.
Oh,
which is really
chills,
humble
actually.
Of really like you would think that she became so huge that she would not never remember, and she always like goes back and
I agree.
Is very thankful.
I've always found her that way. She always remembers by name. She always speaks. I mean, she's a lovely woman.
And really,
I do think that's why she's so successful.
Yeah. Know? No, I. She never like. She kept her humbleness all through the years, and it's really great. Like a great inspiration.
Agreed.
So then I stopped after designing and doing all that. Had to move to Lebanon, and okay. Since I was doing everything out of Paris, I'm like, and I was a one-man show that would like be the accountant, the production manager, the PR, and I would like change my voice to cool people. So
I would seem
more like if it's accounts, I had to like, I couldn't be the designer to call and say, please guys, you haven't settled your invoices, so I had to be different people. So I'm like, okay, I'm a one-man show. I'm moving to Lebanon. How can I even run the business out of there? It's not really like a country that's strong in production and factories, right, and all that. I guess except if you're doing like wedding dresses and things like, right, that, which wasn't at all what, right, I was looking at.
Yeah, Ely has a great business.
Yeah.
Sewing.
So basically, I'm like, I'd rather stop rather than doing something halfway. I'm quite a perfectionist. So I'm like, it's sad, but it's not going to work out of Beirut. So I just stopped it. And my husband was like, I met my husband, I was 16. Uh-huh. He was living, actually, we were both living in Paris at some point, but we never met. Uh-huh. And then met in Italy. So it was really funny. He was my best friend. So so he would always be with me, like doing, I don't know, working all day long, all night long on projects. And he would be helping me to cut patterns and cut things. So he's like, you can't stop. I mean, like, you've done all this. You fought so much at school and all that. How can you stop your line? I'm like, it's not the right timing. I can't do it out of Lebanon. If it's meant to be, it will come back. And so basically I stopped that collection and opened the store in Lebanon.
Yeah.
That's when Plum, exactly.
I was Which is known as one of the best stores in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I hope. I don't know about the world, but it's
it
like in Lebanon, it's quite nice.
And what that was a totally different thing.
That was a totally different thing, but I think it's very helpful because you see things from all angles.
Yeah.
So now I see like what the client wants, mm-hmm, what's the offering in the market, and what price point seems to have be attractive to people, what people ask. Like it's when I designed before having the store, it was like just like the dream,
right?
Which is always great,
right?
And I think I still like the dream, but I wouldn't design like 100 pieces that are all about the dream, because I'm like, if no one can wear it because it's just great on a lookbook or
on a 16-year-old Eastern European model,
that's like it's not gonna. So basically, it was very helpful to see it, to be from both sides. And it's even like the treat, like when you would go as a buyer, everybody's so nice to you. It's like a totally different thing. And from the other side,
absolutely,
you'd be like,
yeah,
I hope she will buy. I hope he will pick the line. Did we receive the order confirmation? So it's really like very different. But I think I really miss the creativity. And it started really because like when I would be doing the buying, I would always be attracted to like colors and playfulness. And I'm like, but why?
Why does it exist?
Yeah, why isn't like one place where I could go and find all this like things that I love? So it was very clear to me what I would be designing. I just thought it has to look like me, because then it becomes very natural and I don't have to think every collection, okay, now what do we do?
Right, you don't it's have to try if it's just really you.
It comes really naturally. So it's like you really can make the dream, and at the same time, I always have the customer in my head.
Yeah.
Like, no, when we did that, it was great in the window, but it never sold.
Right. And do you have a partner in both businesses?
So I have a partner in Plum.
Right.
So she was like a very good friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And when I moved to Lebanon, we were like pregnant together and frustrated together, because we're like, all the big brands existed. So you could go to Beirut and buy Prada, Gucci, Chloe, but like even big brands, but not those very big brands didn't exist. So like we're like, I can't believe there isn't one single store that has Marnie, Marc Jacobs back in the days, Alaya, Louboutin, you know. It was like, I'm like, it's there's so much to do. And so it was like a store with everything that we dreamt like having in Beirut and that we didn't have. So it was curated by me and Raya, my partner.
Yeah.
From like pretty wrapping paper to nice stationery, things that are very basic but that wouldn't exist in Lebanon, like a juice bar with like quote press juices, books. Back then, like, you could go and like listen to music and buy CDs. No, not that anyone would buy a CD, but it's really like everything that we would dream of to put it in that store.
Yeah.
And it was like a smaller store, then it wouldn't fit all our ideas, so we had to move to a bigger store. And the bigger store became even bigger. Now we're like, okay, my God, it became way too big. What have we done?
Is it just women?
It's just women. Okay. We tried kids because at the very beginning, that's what we wanted to do.
Because
we're like,
let's
have a kids store. And then kids were like, was like 10% and women was like 90%. We stopped the kids wear because we felt everyone would just like, if someone receives a gift for, I don't know, a pregnant woman gave birth, gets a gift from Plum, then she would exchange it for something for herself.
For the so, women's section? Oh, yes. My God, that's so funny.
So I'm like, okay, we only so sell funny. The kids when it's on sale. So slowly we started like reducing from 12 brands to 5, 4, 3, and then...
And then done.
Yeah, now it's really like, if I'm at Acne, for instance, and I see that they have cute little sweaters, I would just like... buy them and put them in between women. So it's like more love at first sight rather than a business. And menswear, I think it was too early when we tried menswear because men were intimidated. And even to go like into a women's store, it was weird.
Yeah. No, we separated ours because of that. Because I felt that
I think it makes total sense. Yeah. Even like I remember someone saying like at L'Envin, like psychologically speaking, if they have both, like women and men, they would put the man at the door. So when you go in, it's always menswear because they're intimidated to see like a gown or a dress or something. And then you put the woman.
It's so funny because in December, the women's store transforms completely because it's mostly men. And so we have 11 months of all women in the store in this safe place, you know. And then December, it's men, and it's such a different atmosphere. More stressful, frankly. Yeah. And they're, you know, because they're impatient and they don't feel great. They don't feel comfortable here. And then once the 26th of December comes, it goes back to normal. And it's all women again.
Yeah. Probably maybe because men also are like, they wouldn't spend that much time thinking of what they want to wear.
Right.
It would be, oh, okay, those shirts work well. So they would buy 20 of those shirts for the 20 coming years.
Well, and also they shop, what, like twice a year. Whereas women, we have women that come in every day.
It's
because the inventory changes every day.
I'm just like amazed by all the choices that you have and like how everything is handpicked.
Well, you do the same thing.
Yeah, but still it's different when you come and you see like the environment and the world of, I mean, like your world, then I feel like I know you even better.
Yeah. And Mira, do you have a partner in that?
No.
Just you? And
just me, yeah.
Wow. So how do you manage that?
In the past, it was just me the whole time. And now I'm like, sometimes I go in, I'm like, oh my God, I mean, this is my studio. And like, we're a huge family now.
Yeah.
So we're 12 people now.
Okay.
Like it will be 4 years this summer. So when I started, it was just me and one person. And then we became three for like a while, and then three to six. And then all of a sudden, like in 1 year, we doubled.
Do you think about your dad wanting you to go to business school sometimes and think, I could have used that right now? Because I do.
You do?
I mean, I'm an art major, so I think... a lot of times I'm like, dang it, I wish I'd gone to business school because I don't know how to manage this sometimes.
I don't know why, but I think it's also a character.
Yeah.
Like everything that has to do with numbers, for example, I know I could do it and I know I could look at the numbers and I know that, but it just like blocks me out and it like freaks me out. It depresses me. And I always send the things to my husband. I'm like, please, can you check what's going wrong, for example? And he's like, you can't run a business and not look at the money side. And I'm like,
come on, Mira.
It's what I hate the most. But I don't know if I had gone to a business school, if it would have made any changes or if like my brain blocks when it's everything that has to do with the non-dream.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, because I think that once you get to the real business of things, the real business for me at this point is managing people, really. And so what I love the buying part. I mean, that part's the natural, easy part for me that I don't have to try. I mean, that just comes so naturally. And so when I do that, I'm so in the zone and just like in dreamy, you know, space world like you are.
Yeah.
And then I come back and, you know, you have to deal with the reality of managing people. It's hard. It's really challenging.
I think we're very similar. Maybe it's the
Pisces. Both Pisces, yeah.
Exactly. Because when you're talking, I'm like, oh my God. It's as if... And I think when you first start, you don't realize all what comes with having the store. You would think, like, for me, I was like, wow. I mean, I would be like in all the places buying what I'm frustrated because I don't find and all that. And then you don't realize that there's the VM, there's like the windows, there's the... merchandising, the back office,
stuck in customs and
all
the things,
lost packages, but which is great, I think, because if you think too much, then you don't do anything.
Right.
So it's nice that when you start, you don't have an idea of all what you're going to go through. And then you're there and you're like, okay, I have to deal with it. But that's what I find the hardest, I think, managing the team.
Yeah.
I think also it's the character, and I'm a bit too nice. So like, it would be, can I work from home? And for me, everyone could work from home every day. And then I would come to work and there would be no one, you know? So, but like, it's nice because we're like one big family. So you don't feel like people would take advantage if someone really has to not show up. I have a hard time to be like...
Stern.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Tell me what's next for Mira Makati, for the brand.
So I think also because like being from both sides of the business, I'm always very protective over the brand.
Yeah.
So I'm scared to sell it a lot.
Yeah.
So like every time the sales manager, like Charlotte, comes and is like, there's this store in London that's really pretty. And I'm like, no, we can't sell in London anymore. And she'd be like, Mira, how can you grow? Or like, I don't know. A department store in New York that is interested in the brand. And I'm like, no way. I just feel that if it's too available, it loses something. And I think because I've seen it in like brands that we have in a small country.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, that's probably from your Plum experience, understanding that, isn't it?
That's, I see like brands that were doing amazing, but then you see them everywhere on everyone and all of a sudden no one wants them anymore.
Yeah.
It's like oversaturated. So that's why like I still believe in like secret destinations and not available everywhere. So I know it's like not the easiest way, like commercially speaking, to grow a brand. But I like, for me, it's much more about the experience. So now like I'm working on a pop-up shop in London for like a month and a half. So for me, it's like a huge thing because usually I do pop-ups for like 3 days. That was the maximum. And where you go in the store and you're like into an experience, which you understand because you have that every day in Capital, but like creating several pop-ups in several countries, but it's always like the experience of the consumer going in and like having him or her like travel to the brand's world.
Yeah.
I feel that's really important, and because it's all about the experience. Like I've never thought of doing a fashion show, for example, because for me it's like, I can't imagine the girls walking for 10 minutes wearing the clothes and then it's all over, and like the music and all that. I'm always sad because 2 hours later they're done and I'm like, it was fashion week, everybody's on the run, everybody's busy and all that. And also like, I'm like, it's always only for like the press kind of.
Yeah.
And I feel like the most important
are the buyers,
are the clients. People that clients. And so that's why I'm like, I believe in doing those experiences for a longer time.
Yeah.
So that's like hopefully happening
and
in
it'll
February
be in, the
in London.
Oh, okay. And then in two other cities at the same time or after London?
No, one after the other.
One
so
after
now
the
it's
other.
Like
okay.
London in February. Then I was thinking of doing something in Lebanon.
Wonderful.
I'm like, it's my country.
Yeah.
I know it's not like, like I feel when I think of the brand that it's inspired by my like the Parisian girl because of my childhood. So it's like I try to have it like elegant, and even if it's playful, not to forget like nice fabric, nice cuts and all that. So that's maybe my French side of my life. And then the colors, I think it's Lebanon, the sea, the blue sky and all that. and London the quirkiness. So I feel that even though Lebanon is not like an inspiration that's direct, mm-hmm. it's like where all the colors come from. So I'm like, it would be nice to do something there and like invite the press to come there and see yeah. like where I came from.
Amazing. So that's I want to like come.
Yeah, you're invited before
my brother loves Beirut. He says it's one of his
there.
Favorite. Yeah.
No way.
One of his favorite cities.
Wow. How come he...
He lives in Abu Dhabi. He was a doctor in Kenya.
So he's the doctor. Oh, wow.
But he's just an adventurer and he loves Lebanon.
So yeah. we have to have you either before or after.
Exactly.
So I just try to think of like things that would make me also like excited as a buyer.
Yeah.
London
and then
first
Paris
and,
after
then,
that.
And then Paris is
amazing.
The plan. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, I know. Especially like now I feel... Okay, I love Le Bon Marché. I'm presented there and I'm very like happy to be there. But the fact that Colette closed, I feel that there was a big emptiness.
I agree.
So before I was like, I would never even think for a second to do like a pop-up or something in Paris because I'm like...
Because she does it so well.
Yeah,
there's nothing
so well.
There's nothing to do.
And she was like always so open to do things. So, it's not in the conversation, but I owe her like everything. Because
she was
like,
the first person to pick you up?
She was among, like, she was the second season she picked it up. But, like, straight away, she gave me a window. She would wear it all the time. I never had to email a single store. Like, everybody was coming just because of they've seen it at Colette.
That's amazing.
So it was really hard, the end of Colette. But at the same time, I'm like, it came at the right time. It was, like, her personal choice. It'll always be like a dream because when it stopped it was already like
exactly
a big dream.
It was still so, like, and it was still it never went downhill. It was all,
never,
always
yeah.
amazing.
She didn't wait to like she's, so
well, please remind me to do that too. I don't
know. I don't think you'll
I'll remind you.
Think,
also
perfect. That's great.
Mira, we do something at the end of every podcast, and I'm laughing at myself about it because I don't, it shows my cultural unintelligence because we ask everybody what they wore to the prom, and I don't know if you have proms in Paris. Do you have proms in Paris?
It's a very American thing, but it's funny that you ask that because I would always like tell the, like my daughter, you're so lucky you're going to go to a prom.
A prom. Do they have them in London?
So... They, I mean, I think it became like a trend.
Right.
So it's like she's in the French school, so it doesn't really happen.
Right.
But they came
so
up
funny.
With it because of... But sadly, I never had a prom. So I never wore anything for the prom. I only would just see it in movies. And I would think, if I had a prom, what would I have
worn? And what would it be? What is it? 16 candles? The lavender dress.
Something like I would think like, yeah, something I would never forget. Probably everyone would have thought I'm ridiculous and I would have never had a prom date because you would think that weird girl coming to the prom. But I think I would dare anything. Like I would never think, oh, what would people think?
Yeah.
So, it's like.
Were you always daring? Your clothes
always?
Yeah.
Like,
and you have sisters?
I have a sister who's my opposite. Uh-huh. She's the business side of like when she was helping me with the brand. And a brother who's much more similar to me, but he's like the right balance, I think. But for me, it's always like I nearly get fired from school because I would come. I was like in a very strict school. I had to wear navy and white. And I had to put like the shirt inside the trousers and I would come and put a big belt and they would send me back home. So I had always like troubles because of the way I would
fashion
dress.
Troubles, yes.
Fashion
I get
troubles.
It.
So,
well, thank you so much. Mira.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
We loved having you in Charlotte. What We Wore is produced by Capital and Balta Creative Media. The original song, Someone So Enchanting, was composed and performed by Britt Drozda. What We Wore is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Find out more at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.